Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime's secure credit card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So for folks who've been listening to the program for a while, you know that one of the things that I've always talked about doing is starting the Church of Collective Bargaining. The idea of because, look, the right has taken a lot of things as almost like, faith and religion and have internalized it to that point. And I think collective bargaining has got to be that kind of, that belief in each other, that belief in coming together and fighting for a common goal, fighting to make things better, not just at work, but overall. And I say, look, as a union member, my entire working life, I'm empowered to do other things. And the one thing that the right doesn't want are empowered citizens. They definitely don't want empowered workers, but empowered workers become what? Empowered citizens. Now, if I were to start my Church of Collective Bargaining, which I someday will, I think I have found our Bible. It is titled The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century, co-written by Erica Smiley and Sarita Gupta. That's why I've asked Erica Smiley to come talk with us about it. Also, the executive director of Jobs with Justice. Erica, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, I'm so glad to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me, man.
So, I want to start the Church of Collective Bargaining. I love this idea in the book that you've put together, because you're not just talking about collective bargaining in the workplace. You're talking about my bigger ideal of collective bargaining in every aspect of our lives.
That's right. I mean, look, I'm such a fan, Rick. And so to be able to have this conversation, and I will be your first parishioner, you better count me in, man, because at the end of the day, it's not just a matter of trying to expand this obscure thing that a small group of say unions do, but it's actually a pathway to democracy. And it's true, right? Like informed and empowered voters and union members turn into informed and empowered citizens. That is true, but it's even in some ways bigger than that. Because all we're saying is when we think about collective bargaining, we're just talking about a policy for the workplace, right? We're talking about the ability to set standards, to change standards, to implement and enforce the standards that you collectively set. And we just want to apply that level of decision-making to all elements of our economic lives, in addition to our employment lives. And we want to make sure that it's applied to employment in the way that it is today, not just in the way it was in 1935. So that's the fundamental premise of the book.
Now, as I said, as somebody who has benefited from being a union member throughout all of my working life, I have taken that kind of empowerment that I feel in the workplace in other aspects of life, civic, in relationships and everything else that I do, because it's contagious, I think. And I, you know, much like, and I go back to my Church of Collective Bargaining idea that, you know, I want people to feel that power viscerally. I want them to believe that they have power, and that power in numbers of coming together is in a congregation, if you will, is a way forward. Because in this moment, and you know this as well as Erica, as well as anyone, Erica, we're being just ripped apart and divided at every turn for the sole purpose of being robbed blind. At least that's what I think. I'm curious your thought.
No, it's 100% true. Like if you think that you're the only one experiencing something and you're isolated, you think it's your fault. It's a lot of self-blame. You think you're the one that just didn't make the right budget, or you didn't budget correctly, even though in fact you and many of your coworkers are experiencing the same level of stress, economic stress. And at the end of the day, you know, we are a country that believes in democracy. If you ask most people, they think it should be a democracy. But the thing that I think we've lost is this idea that that's not just voting once a day or once a year. That's not just a political practice, but is actually something that needs to be applied to all elements of life, including our economic life and of course, including employment. And so this is just a way to engage the majority. If you think of democracy as engaging the majority in everyday decision-making and in the implementation and enforcement of that, then you have to be able to apply that economically. And that's what collective bargaining does for us.
Yeah, it's all participatory. I mean, you got to be involved.
It's a sick story. And you don't, you know, I'm from North Carolina, right? You don't knock on doors in the neighborhoods I grew up in and say, hey, you know, you have the right to elect a senator. And likewise today, it's not just about saying, hey, you should have the ability to form and join a union. It's actually, and we see this in the workers who are organizing at Amazon, at Starbucks, and all these places, is that they actually want the right to be able to collectively negotiate conditions and standards on a regular basis at their workplace. And I think that's actually really important. And here's the other thing, Rich, that I think is I just want to lift up and also like really feeds into this idea of the church collective bargaining, which I really love that framework, is that, you know, part of what we also argue is that you can't do this without centering the fights against white supremacy and gender discrimination. And we're seeing that in campaigns today. Like if you look at the Amazon campaigns, both of the fights that just recently tried to form unions, right? The successful one in Staten Island, as well as the one that's too close to call in Bessemer, right? If you talk to the worker leaders who were at the helm of both of those efforts, they were activated and radicalized through the movement for Black Lives, through the murder of George Floyd, and of course, through the fact that here they were deemed as essential workers during a pandemic who were being treated disrespectfully, who weren't getting social distancing, weren't getting proper protective equipment, who weren't being paid fairly. And they said, you know, I think it was Big Mike from the Bessemer plant in Alabama who said, you know, this is our movement for Black Lives here to form this union. And so it's both not just like the right thing to do morally, but actually centering white supremacy and gender discrimination is in fact the motivating factor for many workers today, and is the key to success, is the key to winning.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that, you know, whether no matter where you are on that scale, tearing down those walls or those barriers is a benefit to everyone, because it's how we're divided.
That's right.
As I said earlier in the program, the only way we can go forward is once we're willing to hold hands or stand shoulder to shoulder with or stand in solidarity with people we may not agree with or we may not even like. That's the only way we're going to get forward. We can put aside our differences. We don't have to like everyone we're marching with, but we got to be marching in the same direction and fighting for some similar things. And economically, you know, wages, hours, conditions, that's a good place to start.
That's right. And the labor movement has been the place where people have come together. I mean, there's a reason why unions have historically been called schools of democracy. This is the place where people come together and meet and confer. And like, you know, one of the workers we talk about in the book and who shares her own story is Allison Perry, who's a president of one of the teachers' locals in West Virginia. And she talks really explicitly about democracy and how messy it is, that it's not about everyone agreeing all the time and holding hands all the time. It's actually about really getting into the weeds and debating and discussing, and then coming together with a plan that everyone can feel good about, can feel like they were involved in. And so I think it's really critical. And we can see that, you know, it only benefits our opposition, you know, the big businesses, the right, when we don't stand together in this way. That those are the people who ultimately benefit from us being divided and isolated from each other. So again, it's not simply just a moral question, but it's our path to winning, it's our path to sustainability, our path to power.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Erica Smiley, co-author of The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century, co-written by Erica and Sarita Gupta. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look, get a copy of this. The website, if you want to take a look at it, thefuturewened.com. We'll get links out there. Erica is also the executive director of Jobs with Justice. In looking at this, you answer the question, ask the question, who rules and who benefits? And I think, in this day and age, you go back from Occupy Wall Street and the frame of the 99% versus the 1%. I hope we're at a point where we know who benefits. We know who rules. We know it's the moneyed interest versus the rest of us. And because we're living through this moment of mass inflation, and we're seeing these corporate profits are going through the roof, CEO pay going through the roof, these companies with massive stock buybacks, and workers are angry, consumers are angry and feeling helpless, and we're gonna blame Joe Biden, who can't do anything and hasn't been able to do anything, but this is a moment for collective bargaining, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, look, in the first couple of months of the pandemic back in 2020, I think Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, banked $20 billion. I mean, the man was already like one of the richest people in the world. And just in a couple of months, he made $20 billion off of the pandemic. And there's a really fantastic report put out by the Institute for Policy Studies and others on pandemic profiteers, right? Like, this is a period where it wasn't simply that the pandemic caused these folks to be rich. It just exposed how deep the level of inequality was and how much to the benefit it was for some of these, I guess, one percenters or whatever we want to call them, these ultimate profiteers, how much of a benefit it was for many of us to be in such precarious situations. And it's exciting because now we have the situation where, they call it the Striketober in the fall. And I was like, that's really cute, but it's not going to end at the end of October. We have this moment where workers are beginning to take action. And, there's a quote in the book. We talk about W.B. Du Bois talking about the largest strike in American history being when 500,000 formerly enslaved Black people simply walked off the plantation in the 1860s. And here we have a situation where millions of workers are also acting with their feet by leaving bad jobs in search of better ones and being able to make those decisions because of the relief and the support that they're beginning to get from organizations and unions, whether they're affiliated or not. This is a moment where our movement has stepped up to actually support workers who are beginning to take stock of the power that they actually have, perhaps that they've always had, but didn't realize until pandemic.
Yeah, and this is an interesting moment because I look at the Starbucks Workers United movement. They're not affiliated with a big union. This is a startup. And, I remember I was doing a radio show on Sirius a number of years back, and someone, said, how can we start up our own union? And I went through this process of explaining how you could go about doing it. And, someone said, well, why would you bother doing that? You just join one of the other ones. And going, well, you can. I would go with an existing union, but, you can start your own in your workplace. It is possible because that's what the law allows. You don't need to go with one that's already here. And here we're seeing it playing out right in front of us.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, a lot of the Starbucks workers are working really closely with Workers United and SEIU, but certainly not all of them. And then, when you look at the Amazon workers, they're affiliated with unions, traditional and non-traditional worker centers and community groups, they're just all over the place. Everyone's just like whatever it takes to kind of get in motion. And, you've got the Apple workers, CWA. I mean, it's a let every flower bloom kind of moment. And one of the things that's kind of crazy, Rick, is like, when you go to some of these other countries, I remember like listening and hearing from colleagues in India and some of these other places, the things that we super delineate as unions versus worker centers and alt labor versus traditional labor and all that stuff, all of those would just be considered unions in other places. And it's almost like a who cares how you define a union, so long as if workers are coming together, are attempting to organize, negotiate, and collectively bargain together, we're going to act like a union regardless of what the IRS wants to call us. The point is we want to have a democratic say in what's happening to us in our economic lives. And I find that workers around the country are trying to do that by any means possible.
No, and I think that's important. It's an important mindset. And what we're talking about here, what I think is really important is this isn't just, you know, traditional, you know, brick and mortar kind of union. This is a mental, this is a mindset, especially as we're moving towards, or I shouldn't say we're moving towards, we're being pushed toward the gig economy and everyone being their own boss and creating this kind of hybrid, you're an employee, but no, not really. You're taking all the risks and you're the one responsible for everything. And maybe we'll pay you or maybe we won't kind of employment that goes on. And this is an opportunity to maybe, you know, now understand they can't unionize. Maybe this is a way to empower them to organize and collectively bargain in a way that our law doesn't allow.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, so, you know, this is the gig economy, the platform economy. It's not new, actually. It's a very old strategy just applied to new technology to basically socialize all the risks while privatizing all the benefit and all the profits. And one of the most exciting campaign examples that maybe I can't even remember if we fit it in because it happened right when we were going into publishing was the example of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, who had a gig worker committee as a part of the organization because of this platform called Handy, which had essentially amalgamated employers for a workforce that had traditionally been pretty disparate, where you've got just one home that you're taking care of or one employer. Like, how do you collectively negotiate with that? So this platform comes in to, like, you know, shop out domestic workers and nannies and house cleaners and whatnot. And the domestic workers began to organize workers who use this platform. And because of the historic exclusion of domestic workers from the National Labor Relations Act, the domestic workers were just able to sign like a direct contract between two private entities in like civil court with the company that actually includes a lot of the same things that you would include in a collective bargaining agreement, including a grievance process and a baseline fair wage benefits and the ability to renew and renegotiate. And so, you know, you're seeing even in sectors that are, I feel like corporations are attempting to fissure and to continue to socialize risk while privatizing the benefit, we're seeing some incredibly creative and innovative strategies from workers today.
Yeah, it's incredible. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show with Erica Smiley. The book, The Future We Need, Organizing for a Better Democracy in the 21st Century. The website, thefutureweneed.com. Check it out. Highly suggest taking a look at this book. Make it the collective Church of Collective Bargaining Bible. Erica, last question I've got for you. You know, as you're going around, you're doing these interviews and you're out there, you know, hawking the book. You know, what are you hoping people take from this? What are you hoping comes out of this, other than making this being my Bible at the Church of Collective Bargaining?
You know, I think if you take nothing else, I think that you know, if you read the stories of the everyday people who are sharing not only their personal stories but their strategies and the things that they're trying to test, and see that this is something we could do too. If you don't just wait on someone else to come and give you the strategy, but you begin to try things, to talk to other people who are in the same economic relationships as you, then I hope that you take away that you can do it too, that it's not something that you have to be an expert on. Like a lot of people, even the many of the workers who just recently won recognition in Staten Island are just going through basic union bargaining 101 right now as we speak. They're making the road by walking. And look, the last thing I'll say here, Rick, is like, you know, my ancestors, I wouldn't be here if my ancestors weren't willing to take action regardless of the rules, to break laws that weren't just for us. You know, many laws are only changed after there's a movement that rises up that's willing to break them and show their insufficiency. And I actually think that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing a movement of workers who are saying, look, we totally respect this framework for collective bargaining and how you define a union. It's totally helped us in the past for the last 100 years. But we need something new now that meets the conditions that we're living in today. And we want to be able to elevate and expand on what the labor movement has built over the past couple of centuries.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Erica. I appreciate the time. Great book. I hope folks will take a look at it. The Future We Need, written by Erica Smalley and Sarita Gupta. Thefutureweneed.com, the website. Highly suggest it. Check it out. Make it part of your reading. Erica, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Rick.
Great stuff. Again, thefutureweneed.com. Make sure you check out that website. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a second. Share with your friends. Comment. or subscribe so you never miss anything. Right back after this.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.